Okay, we're going to start the top of Kuvyud Bet Amud Aleph. Yesterday we left off with the Braisa about the machlokas between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel about what the source for the fact that a husband inherits his wife. So we read yesterday was the sources of Rabbi Shmuel, who brought five successive sources as to the fact that a husband inherits the wife. The Gemara wants to know, why does he need five sources? What are the five sources that he used? Right, the first one that he brought down is V'chol Bat, Yereshet Nachala Mimatot Bnei Yisrael, Echad Mimishpachat Aviat Elisha. So again, this is the psukim that are found by Benot Zlavchad, that they have to, we don't want, this is the positive commandment, that we don't want land moved from one shevet to another shevet. So therefore, B'chobad Yereshet Nachala Mimatot Bnei Yisrael, Echad Mishpachat Mateh Aviat Elisha, the man Yishuv Bnei Yisrael, Ish Nachalat Avotav. So in order to preserve that, that's the positive commandment. That's one. It's clear, according to Rabbi Shmuel, that this is talking about the husband. The reason that she needs to marry into her own shevet is because if she doesn't marry her own shevet, then the husband could possibly inherit her and move the nachala from one shevet to the other. The next one is Omer. It also says in the same area, same psukim there, which is, Lo tisov nachalav nisrael imateh El Mateh, that you cannot have Nachla move from one shevet to another shevet. Ki ish b'nachlat mateh avotav yidbakhu b'nei Yisrael. That's the next one. And then after that, it brings another pasuk, Be'omer, which is the pasuk afterwards. I mean, these are three psukim in a row. Alav, and Aseh, and then Alav. V'lo tisov nachla mimateh la mateh acher. Ki ish b'nachlato yidbakhu matot b'nei Yisrael. So then he brings, so each one of those, he says, is another proof. Ve'omer, and then the last next proof is that Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen was buried in Givat Pinchas. Where does Pinchas have land that didn't belong to Elazar? It must be that he married a woman and then inherited the land. And same thing, he brings another pasuk from Divrei Hayamim. Uskuv olid et Yair, ve'ilu esrim ushalush sharim beretz ha-Gilad. Chiminayin le'Yair, shloya l'uskuv. How did Yair have property without skuv? Again, the Braisa suggests that the land came to him because he married a woman who passed away. So now, the Gemara asks the basic question, second line of Kuvyud Bet, my Vomer. What is the Vomer here? Why do you need five times that Rabbi Shmuel needs to approve to his position? So that's because it's not so simple. What he suggested in each of these psukim is not necessarily the obvious reasoning behind them, and therefore he's going to need a lot of proof to support his position. And we might even find in the end that he doesn't have any proof. So when it says, "My vomer v'chi teima b'sibat haben nekakapit kro aval ba lo yarit." Wait a minute. There are two ways you can move nachla from one shevet to another shevet. One way is the husband. If the husband inherits the wife, then they will move from one nachla to the other. The other possibility is say that the husband does not inherit the wife, but they simply have a child. If they have a child, the child is miuchas after the father's shevet. And if the mother passes away and the child inherits the mother, it would also move from one shevet to another shevet. So why are you so certain that all these psukim that you're quoting, or at least here, the first pasuk that you're quoting, is talking about the husband, and what we're afraid of is machla moving because from wife to husband? Maybe the whole fear is that the machla can move from the wife to the son, meaning that from the woman to the son. And that's what we're worried about here. You have no proof from these psukim that the husband inherits the wife. It can simply be the son inherits the mother. It says, so then he brings the next pasuk, which is Lo tisov nachlav nisyom imateh lamateh. Brings the lav. So Mar says, v'chitem olav or lav. Right, you would think you don't need two psukim to teach you the same thing. V'chitem, well, no, but these are different. One is lav or lav lav, and the other one is v'aseh. One's a positive commandment, one is a negative commandment. So why can't you have two psukim that both discuss the ben, that discuss the child? So he says, alright. So if you say that it's both of them, Tashma, there's a third pasuk. Lo tisov nachla mimateh lamateh acher. There's an additional lav. So now why would you need two lavin to tell you the same thing? So fine, you have an essay, you have a lav. Both of those teach you that the son inherits the mother. But then in another lav, that can't be telling them the same thing again, that the son inherits the mother. It must be that it's the husband inheriting the wife that we are worried about. And the guy says, what? V'chitema, if you want to say lav or lav b'shtein lavim, if you want to say no. It's all talking about the son from the mother. And there's an assay plus two lavin. We want to give him we want to throw the book at him. So that's it. It's all about the son from the mother, not from the husband from the father. Again, Tosfos raises the issue that in general we don't say lavin yeterei unless we have nothing to do with the pasuk. So This seems to go against that, but it's the flow of the Gemara about trying to break this up. But I don't know if we would necessarily say this in most cases where you would say two lavin. We'd rather have a drusha for the second lav and not place it as an extra lav here. But at this point, the Gemara is like that. So now, if you say that it's all talking about a mother to a son, and now there's a lav and another lav, then what do you want? V'tashma v'Elazar ben Aaron mate. So now we brought the proof from Givat Pinchas that Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen is buried in the Givat Pinchas. So where did he get it from if it wasn't from his father? So now we suggest that he inherited it from his wife. So Amar says, V'chitem Elazar hu denosiv itita. Wait a minute, what's the possibility is that Elazar married a woman, umeita, and she died, v'yarta Pinchas, and his son Pinchas inherited it. There are two ways where Pinchas is going to come into the possession of property without his father. One possibility is that he married a woman, and he inherits the woman, which is what Rabbi Shmuel is trying to prove. But the other possibility is that his father married a woman from another Shevet. Elazar, if he married a woman from another Shevet, and then she passes away, that property will pass to Pinchas' son. So if it's Pinchas, if we say only the son inherits the mother, and not the husband inheriting the wife, you could still come up with a hechitimsa that the property would pass from someone to Pinchas without his father ever having any possession of the property. So why are you so certain that it's talking about a Baal, a husband must inherit the wife? It could simply be, again, that the son is inheriting the mother. So now, the Gemara says, oh, if you say that, then why do you need the other pasuk? That pasuk is referring to Elazar marrying a woman, and the Pinchas is her Tashma, uskuba lidat yair. We have another pasuk in Divrei Yamim that says the exact same thing. So now, at this point, the Gemara is saying, v'chitei ma'atam ha'chihu, right? What do you want to say? By Yair and Skuv, you can say the same thing. The reason that Yair has property is not because his wife died, it's because his father married a woman. That woman passed away, and it passed it to Yair. So then the Gemara says, in kain trei kri lamali. Why do you need me two psukim to teach me the same thing? Why do you need a pasuk, right, in Divrei Yamim, in a pasuk in Yoshua to teach me the same thing, right? It's a very difficult tradition. Why not? First of all, when do you ask from Nevi'im to Ketuvim? Let's start with that. And number two, it doesn't seem to be that it's presenting a halachic issue. It's simply telling you a story. And that's what the Gemara answer is going to be right now. The Gemara is going to do that. At this point, the Gemara just says, okay, you want to say that they're both talking about the same thing? It can't be, because they wouldn't want to teach you the same halacha. And then Amalei Rav Papa, Rav Aye, Mimai. How do you know that? That the husband does not. They cry, b'sibata ben, k'deshaninan. Right? And the psukim have to do with the son inheriting the mother. V'yair. Okay, so you want to suggest now that, you have a problem here, you don't want two psukim to tell you the same thing. I have a solution. V'yair d'zavin mizvin. He bought it. Yair purchased the property. Why not? There's a possibility that his father never owned it, and Yair went out and purchased the property. So that solves all our problems. Now we have a way to explain all the five proofs that Rabbi Shmuel brought down. We explain them all about his son inheriting the mother. And now you have no proof. So he says, wait, Upinchas nami, dezam mizman. He says, and Pinchas too, you could say that he bought the property. Why do you have to get involved? Right, with the mother, with the son, they all bought the property. If he bought the property, then we don't have to think about mothers or husbands inheriting. It's simply the new generation bought a piece of property. And the way the Rashbam formulates it, which is it's very interesting terminology that he uses here. I think, David, this was some of your objection to how could the Gemara even think, have a Havamir this way. He writes, Ashrosho Yair Ma'er Lanu. It's going to teach us about how wealthy he was. Kamosha Matsinu Barbe Mekamot Minevim. Many times in Nevi'im tell you something about the person, tell you how wealthy he was, what type of person he was, and describes what he owned, the land or the property or the possessions that he had. So these psukim are not coming to teach us any halacha, right? But they're coming to teach us about the oshram, v'sipur devarim ba'almahu. It's just simply telling us the story. Doesn't have to, supposed to the Torah, maybe Navi doesn't have to have every word, right, to have harim built on it. It's simply going to be just a description of the facts that were there. That this person was very wealthy, this person had this, just a running through the type of information. So the suggestion that Pinchas also bought it, he says, no matzid amart. You can't say that. Rabbi says back to him, you want to suggest that Pinchas bought it? I'm like, Pinchas mizaven, lo matzid amart. Why? Im kain, what was the problem? What did Pinchas do with the property? He buried his father there. If you purchase property and you live in Eretz Yisrael at that time, what happens to the property? During the Yovel, it's going to return to its owner. So now what you have is that Pinchas buried his father in a piece of property, then the Yovel will return to its original owner. I mean, Elazar is now going to be buried in a piece of property that belongs to someone else, does not belong to the family. So, Dim Kain, Nimsei Tzadech Uzeret B'Yovel, so they will go back in the Yovel, V'Nimtzei, Nimtza Tzadik Kavur B'Kever Shein HaShalach. And Tzadik Elazar is buried in a piece of property that doesn't belong to his family, and it's going to be go back to someone else's possession. Ella, so now what are you going to suggest? Ema Denafalei Mistei Charamim. No problem, we can solve that problem. That it fell to him, Mistei Charamim. Okay, Mistei Charamim is what the Kohanim get on the Yovel. Either Mistei Charamim is Tam, someone who's Makdish the Charamim. It goes to the Kohanim, it's a Machlokas in the Gemara in Erechin. Whether someone who's Makdish the Charamim goes to Kohanim or goes to the Mikdash. Right, so you could be, according to the opinion, who says it goes to Kohanim. Or the other possibility is a Stei Achuzah that was Mukdash, that was Mukdash, and then came the Yovel, was not redeemed. If it's not redeemed, then it, or if it's sold to a third party and redeemed, I'm sorry, if it's sold to a third party, but not to the family to redeem it before the Yovel, then it goes out to the Kohanim during the Yovel. So the same thing over here. The possibility is Pinchas inherited his property here from either Stei Charamim, it came from someone who was Makdish to the Kohanim, or it came from the Yovel. At the Yovel, all the property that was given to Hekdesh and was sold out, then is divided by the Kohanim. Elazar got his piece, Pinchas got his piece, and Elazar has nothing to do with the piece that Pinchas got, and that's how he has a separate property. So again, now we're at a point where the Braisa has no support for Rabbi Shmuel. The Rashbam believes that's the end of this conversation. The Rashbam believes that we cannot answer up the Braisa. The Braisa has no proof for where Rabbi Shmuel is trying to stand, and now the Gemara is moving on to a new section, a new discussion. The Ri, on the other hand, Tosos, who has a different gears over here, believes that Abaye is going to continue to try to answer up the problems of the Braisa. I mean, we have a conversation with Rav Papa and Abaye, started a long time ago, I may not even remember, that Rav Papa and Abaye are already discussing these issues. We had some interruptions, and then we came back here again to speak. Now, Rav Papa and Abaye are discussing whether you can really learn out from these psukim where the husband inherits his wife. And the conclusion according to Rashbam is not that Rav Papa disagrees with Abaye about the basic premise that a husband does inherit his wife. He just says you don't have a proof from this Braisa. And in the end, Abaye has to concede because the truth is we can explain all the psukim in the Braisa without having to be compelled to say that the husband inherits the wife. That's the way the Rashbam reads it. Tosfos believes no, that Abaye now is going to answer the question or continue to deal with this issue of the Braisa. And he has a Girsa, the alternative Girsa. And here the read. The Girsa at Asfarim, the Gassin, and Amar Abaye, Isaka Datcha, the Baal Yerit. He says, if you think the husband does not inherit, right? Now, if the husband inherits, then we have a Takana. We have a way to fix the problem. This is the problem of Notzlavcha. The problem of Notzlavcha is that we want to solve the problem of Nachla moving from one to the other. So if you want to fix the problem of Nachla moving from one family to one Shevet to another Shevet, what should they do? They should marry first their father's Shevet. Now, how are you going to explain this? If you understand that it's the husband not inheriting over here, that the husband does not inherit his wife, then you don't have a solution. Right, you don't have a solution. But the problem is, if you remember, that before when we discussed Benot Slavchad, the Pasuk says, and I'll read you the Pasuk again, says, Chol bat yoreshet nachala mimatot b'nei Yisrael. That this daughter inherited mimatot b'nei Yisrael. So now we have Benot Slavchad. Benot Slavchad inherited property not only from their father, Slavchad, but also from their mother. So now they've inherited property from two different Shvatim. The possibility is that their father married someone from Shevet Reuven. Let's call it this. Benot Slavchad had a mother from Reuven and a father from Shevet Menasheh.
If Slavchad had only boys, they would also inherit from their mother.
Right. Correct. But now we have a woman who has inherited property from a mother and a father. Father Slavchad, who's from Menasheh, and a mother from Reuven, let's call it. So now they inherit the property. If they marry someone Mishevet Aviha, they go ahead and they marry something from Shevet Aviha, right? If the husband inherits the wife, right? If the husband inherits the wife, then the takana is that she marries someone from her shevet. But if it's only that the son inherits the parents, then by definition the property is going to move from one shevet to another shevet, because you can never solve this problem. Now, how do you solve the other problem? You're going to say, "Me, wait. If the husband marries the, if she marries someone from shevet, then it's also going to move to a new shevet. So why is there a solution? We're going to see in a second the Gemara has a solution to that problem. But right now the Gemara is not discussing that solution. The solution that the Gemara will bring up is that she will actually have to marry someone who's identical to her. That means that the Benot Slavchad, who have a father from Menashe and a mother from Reuven, will have to marry a husband who also has a father from Menashe and a mother from Reuven. That'll be the solution. And therefore, when the husband inherits, he does not change the status of the property. The property is exactly like the property that his wife inherited. That will not be true of the son. The son is now marrying someone who is both from Menashe, and the son is completely a Menashite. If he's completely a Menashite, then you've actually moved the property to a different location. Abaye's point, according to the Ri, this is Abaye's point, according to the Ri, Abaye's point is simply that I can explain this brisa. If you say that a husband inherits his wife, I can explain to you all the psukim by Benot Slavchad, and I can understand the solution that the Torah gave. The solution the Torah gave is that you'll marry someone identical to yourself. You'll marry someone who has a father from Menashe, a mother from Reuven. And therefore, if this daughter, Benot Slavchad, who inherited both from their father and from their mother, so they have property that came from Shevet Reuven to them. So in order not to be Tisov Nachla, in order that the Nachla does not move, they should marry a husband who is also from Menashe and Reuven. And therefore the Nachla will move, because she's marrying someone identical to her position. Now truthfully, it's not really a great solution, because in the end, everybody's Miuchas Achar Shevet Av. So even if she marries someone that's father's from Menashe and mother's from Reuven, in the end the property will still move. But she will be moving the property no more than it's already been moved by itself. Meaning that she, Benot Slavchad, now inherited property from a mother Reuven, father Menashe. So now if they marry someone identical to them, they're not moving the property any more than it's been moved by itself. They didn't do anything. They inherited it. They didn't do anything actively to do that. Now if they marry someone who's identical to their position, they haven't moved the property any further to another shevet. But if you say the only way that a shevet, or not, machal is moved from shevet to shevet is through a son, then you can never have a solution. Because if the son inherits, he goes after Shevet Av. Shevet Av and the aim here are Menashe. In that case, it clearly moves to another Shevet, and her marrying a someone from her own Shevet, or someone from a mixed Shevet, will not help the situation. It will move completely to Menashe at that point in time. So that's Abaye's basic claim. According to the Ri, the Brisa can be explained only if, or the Pesukim in the Torah can only be explained if you say that a husband inherits his wife, and the solution of the Torah is to marry someone similar to yourself. That would be the solution. If you say the only thing the Torah is talking about or worried about is that a son inherits a mother, there is no solution to that problem. And then what's the Torah speaking about? What's the Torah thinking about? That you should marry someone from your father's shevet. That doesn't do anything. That doesn't help you at all. So that's the claim of Abaye at this point in time, according to the Ri. According to the Rashbam, the Brais is gone. The Brais is gone at this time, and the question of Abaye is simply about, how do we explain the psukim? How do you explain the psukim in the Torah? So Rabbi, so sovai mitzvah akron achol mishivta d'ima l'shivta d'abo. So it's basically a question out of the blue, which is what the Ri takes objection to with the Rashbam. But Rabbi's question is basically going on the psukim and saying, listen, forget about the price. The price we can't explain. But how do you explain the parsha in the Torah? How do you explain the parsha in the Torah that says she should only marry someone from her father's family? In the end, if her mother, Benot Slavchad, had a mother from a different shevet, you haven't solved the problem. So now, umimai, Rav Papa says back to him, how do you know? The Dilma Shani Hotam Kshikvar Huzba. There's a difference between actively moving property through Nisuin and passively receiving property. Over here, the Benot Slavchad, if their mother was from Reuven and their father was from Menashe, did they do anything actively to have the property come into their possession? The answer is no. Yes, it moved from Shevet to Shevet. Yes, it moved from Reuven to Shevet Menashe. But it wasn't because they got married. It was because it simply fell to them from their parents. And their father, Tzlavchad, had married someone from Reuven. There was no Easter at that time for her father to marry someone from Reuven. Now, because they've been Michalek, the property to the Ba'ei Aretz, at that point in time, there's now an issue. So now they say, Benot Slavchad, don't marry someone from your own Shevet. But that's fine, because they're actively going to cause Nachla to move. But the fact that Nachla moved passively to them, why should they have to worry about that? They should be able to marry whoever they want. because that nachla is already in their possession and came from someone else, but it's not their issue. Their marriage is not going to change that.
Which she come from?
Reuven. Their mother came from Reuven.
Right.
And she married Safchad before there was any nitzchalek aretz.
She also had no other son.
Right, it must be that she inherited the property. It's not a real case. The case is just suggesting that there's a possibility that this happened. And this happened, what's the Torah giving the solution that she married someone from Shevet Aviyah? That still may not help the fact that Nachla is going to move from Shevet to Shevet. But Papa's answer is, Eino Chanami, you're right. All the Torah can solve is marriage. They can tell you who to marry in order to solve the problem. What they can't tell you is who should die, you know, first in order to protect the property. That they can't do. And when they inherit property from their mother, they couldn't do anything about it. That's not within their power to change. That's what Rav Papa says. So Abaye responds and says, "Malay shfaruz ba'doim mina." We don't say that. Now, whether he says we don't say that, or we're not sure if we say that, it's not clear from Abaye. Maybe we don't say that, or maybe we do say that. Who says that once the property moved passively, that you can go marry whomever you want? Why? Because it's actually two stages, and this is a Abaye's position. Again, it's not an easy position to suggest that if your mother, if the Bnot Safchad had a mother from Reuven and a father from Menasheh, and they inherited the property, yes, it's already moved to Shevet Menasheh, because they are in Shevet Menasheh, the daughters in Shevet Menasheh, but it's only moved a part of the way because it came from the mother Reuven and the father Menasheh. So yes, it moved passively up to a point. But if they marry, it will completely move to Shevet Menasheh because their son will now inherit them. So if their son inherits them, then it's going to completely be a Menasheh. There'll be no a remnant of Shevet Reuven here. If they don't marry, let's say they don't marry, or they marry a husband who has a mother from Reuven and a father from Menasheh, they're not moving the property any further to Menasheh in that case. The difficulty with all this is the mother should be irrelevant in all these cases, because once the daughter inherits, even if she inherits, her mother, it doesn't matter, and it moves the Shevet Menasheh. The Gemara's suggestion at this point is that the mother's Shevet has some bearing on the property until it's fully into the possession of the Shevet through a male inheritor. Alright, it's not easy to understand. It doesn't really make so much sense, but that's the Gemara's premise over here. So I'm Amalei Rav Yemer the Ravashi. Rav Yemer said to the Ravashi, Iyamart, if you say Bishlama Shekvar Huzba, if you say that the property already moved over to the daughters, over to Benot Zavchad, and therefore they don't have to worry about their mother's, where she came from, then Hainu de Mitok Makra. Then you can explain the Pasuk, Ben Visibata Ben Visibata Ba. Right, then we can explain the Pasuk who says that she has to marry someone from Shevet Aviyah. The reason she has to marry someone from Shevet Aviyah is to protect the property from moving from Shevet to Shevet. Her husband's from Menasheh, and her son's from Menasheh, and she's from Menasheh. So we solved the problem. That's what David was suggesting before. The problem is all solved. We have everybody from Menasheh. What do we have to worry about? That's if you say Shevar Huzba. The property already moved from Reuven to Menasheh, and the Menot Zavchad don't have to worry about it. Aval Ela Yamar Do Amrinat Shevar Huzba. If you say that, wait, we don't say that the property removed. When she married someone from her father's Shevet, my Hava. What's the solution here? That you're moving the property. And this individual, Rav Yemar, does not understand Abaye's position, which is about to be stated over here, that there is a solution. The solution to a woman, like Benot Zavchad, who inherited from a mother from a different Shevet, there is a solution to that problem. What's the solution to that problem? The next line in the Gemara. She'll have to marry someone who's identical to her. Alright, so that's the solution in the end. But the question of Rabbi Yemar is, okay, Abaye, you want to suggest that the property really didn't move yet? When a daughter, Benot Zavchad, inherits their mother from Reuven and their father from Menasheh, the property that came from their mother is still somewhat tied to Shevet Reuven, and therefore if they were to marry into Menasheh, that would cause a problem. Then how do you ever solve the problem? Meaning that you can explain it with how do you explain the pasuk that you can only marry someone in Mateh Aviyah? It doesn't help you. You're still moving Nachla from one person to another person if she marries someone from Menasheh. So Abaye's answer is no, that's not true. She can marry someone, a husband, who's identical to her. Now it comes to a son, we can't solve that problem. And we're not going to tell someone, don't marry a person because you'll have a son that moves Nachla. That we can't demand of her. That's something that she does pass. That comes after the marriage. What we can stop her from doing is marrying someone that will cause Nachla to move right now. What's the solution to that? She have to marry someone who's identical to her, someone who has a father. So they married their cousins, their first cousins in the Torah. So their first cousins will also have to have a mother from Reuven and a father from Menasheh, which is an unbelievable suggestion. And even the solution to me, again, it's a weak solution. The whole idea is weak. But that's where the Gemara is right now. So now the Gemara continues, Ihochi. So if that's the case, how does the Torah suggest? The Torah tells the daughters what to do. You know what they have to do? It says they have to marry. They have to marry someone who is from their father's shevet. Oh, why doesn't it say, Ach mishpachat matei aviem v'imam tiyena l'nashim? The way Abai is explaining now that the husband has to be both identical from the mother's side and the father's side. Why is it just suggesting that, why is it only mentioned matei aviem? So that's the Gemara's question. Yochi, haile echad mishpachat matei avia v'imam ibaile. It should have to say from both. See, iktiv hochi, if it's simply written that, ava minu afilu ipcho. I would have thought either way. Meaning matei avia, matei imam just means that, okay, maybe if his father was from Ruvain and his mother was from Menashe, it's half and half. All the Torah is telling you to be the same. I mean, it doesn't tell you that Aviyah is her Aviyah, and Imah is her Imah. It has to be identical. If it simply wrote Aviyah, Imah, we just know that he has to have a mix. He has to be a 50-50. It's like an Ashkenazi Sephardi. As long as you have one parent that's Ashkenazi or Sephardi, then we're okay. Right? But that's not true, because one of them will be an Ashkenazi, and one of them will be a Sephardi. So that's not, right? That's not going to work over here. So they says, Iktiv Achi, if it had written Aviyah, Imah, Vimina, Filipcha, Kamash Malan, that's not the case. So therefore it reads Matei Aviyah, and the same is true with Matei Imah. The reason it didn't write Matei Imah is so you don't come confused. But the truth is that Ein Ochanami, it's the same for Matei Imah. Right, I'm not just confused, that's the solution of Abaye. Right, it doesn't say Imah, but the suggestion according to Abaye is that you would say Imah as well. Now, so according to this, in the end, Abaye's solution, according to the Ri, Abaye solved the problem of the Braisa. And then after solving the problem of the Braisa, we had a series of questions that questioned Abai's understanding of the Tzukim according to the Braisa, according to the Ri. According to the Rishbam, Abai's whole questioning, he left the Braisa. The Braisa is unexplainable at this point in time. Then he goes on, let's understand the Tzukim themselves. How do you explain the Tzukim here that it's talking about a son and not a husband? Because if it's a son, we never have a solution to the problem. If it's a husband, we do have a solution to the problem. The question or the challenge to Abaye is, why with the husband do you have a solution to the problem? What solution do you have to the problem? Abaye says, I do have a solution, is that the husband will have to be identical to the wife, which is that he will have to both have a mother from Reuven and a father from Menashe, and therefore you won't cause Nachalat to move. The underlying assumption there is that when the woman inherits from a mother's from Reuven and a father from Menashe, even though technically it's already moved to Shevet Menashe, it still has some remnant from Reuven, and by marrying a husband who also has a mother from Reuven, you'll protect or stop it from moving completely over, and only once they have a son, which is the inevitable moving of the property, which isn't her problem, there, we don't have a solution to the problem. That's a biased suggestion. Right? Obviously, the easier suggestion is to say that Kfar Huzba. The easier suggestion is then to say that property already moved. Once Bnei Yisachar inherit their mother from Reuven, they are Menashites. If they are Menashites, then they can inherit from the mother, they're already Pnei Menashe. And if they marry a husband from Menashe, no matter if his mother and his father are from Menashe, doesn't matter, because the property is already part of Shevet Menashe once Bnei Yisachar have it. And therefore, if they marry someone from Menashe, that is a solution, because it's not moving. The property moved by itself. The property moved by itself, then we don't care, again, we don't care what the makeup of the husband is, as long as he's from Shevet Menashe. And you do have a solution. So the pivotal point here is, how do you view a daughter who inherits property from a mother from one Shevet and a father from another Shevet? Basically, Benot Tzavchad. How do you view them if their mother was from Reuven? According to Abaye, you view it as the property still has some connection to Reuven. According to Rav Papa or the others, Rav Yemar over here, the solution to that, the fact is that the property moved to Menashe. They don't have to think about that. That's outside of their realm, outside of their ability to deal with it. It's not their fault that their mother was from Reuven. They can't do anything about that. Now they want to go marry, just marry someone Matei Aviyah. Again, the solution for Abaye will be that he has to marry someone who is from her father and mother Shevet, meaning they match identically. And that's how he solves the problem, because then you haven't moved the property any more than it's moved already. And according to, you know, Rav Papa or Rav Yemar, who are challenging this, the property is already in Shevet Menashe. If it's already in Shevet Menashe, go marry someone from Shevet Menashe, anyone from Shevet Menashe, because as long as you keep it with the Menashe, you are fine. That's the flow of the Gemara. Just wanted to review. It's not simple. Again, the Ri and the Rashbam argue a little bit about, which we discussed, about how what the flow of the Gemara is. That's just to have a recap on the Gemara. Now, the Gemara has, of course, it's Machlokas Tosos and the Rashbam again, how to read this Gemara. But there are two bright dots. Tanya, B'sibat HaBen, Tanya B'sibat HaBal, Tanya B'sibat HaBen. Right, they have two braitot. One talks about Sibet HaBen, and one talks about Sibet HaBal. The way the Rashbam reads the Gemara now, the braitot have the same conclusion. The brides are identical, and they have the same conclusion. They're just called Sibat Abba and Sibat Aben because of how they start, the premise by which they start. So I read the Girsa here in front of us is the Girsa of the Rishbam. So read it, and then we'll explain why the Rabbeinu Tam disagrees over here. Tanya b'Sibat Aben. What is the Brisa that is talks about moving property of the child? It says, Lo tisov nechalal livnei yisrael mateh al mateh. That's one lav, as we discussed before. That's in Pasuk Vav in, Pasuk Zayin in Perek, Lamed Vav in Maseh. So it says, you're not allowed to move nechalal from one mateh to one mateh. It's talking about moving nachla from a child. I mean, the child will move nachla if you don't marry someone from Yom Shevet. But no, don't marry someone from Yom Shevet. Their children will inherit them, and they will move the nachla from one Shevet to another. So she must marry someone from her Shevet in order to not allow nachla to move by her children. So do you think that pasuk is talking about the son? Maybe it's talking about the husband. So if Shuomer, there's another pasuk in pasuk Tet which says, "Lo tizov nachla mi mateh la mateh acher." Says, "Don't move nachla from one mateh to another mateh." Harei b'sibat abal ma'amur. You've already described the sibat abal. Sibat abal, because there it says mi mateh la mateh acher. It happens immediately. When does it happen immediately? When you marry a husband from a different shevet. With the ben, it only happens if she has the child later on. Then it's mateh la mateh. So what the suggestion of the Braisa is, the first pasuk, we have Mateh, Mateh, we don't know what song it is. It's not about Ben or Baal. Then we say, Mateh, we have another pasuk that says, Mateh, 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 Acher. Then that's talking about the husband already. If we have one pasuk that talks about the husband, then the first pasuk must be talking about the son. So we know, the premise of the Braisa is that we know that a son inherits his mother, and a husband inherits his wife. So we have two pasukim, one pasuk to say, don't marry a husband from another shevet because he'll move nachla. But another shevet, don't marry a husband from a different shevet because your son will then have, it'll move the nachla. So that's the assumption of the braisa. You have two psukim. One pasuk is about Baal. Second pasuk talks about Ben. What do I do? Lo tisov nachla. That's the answer. Tanya yidach. We have another braisa. The other braisa says, lo tisov nachla mimateh lamateh acher. So here it's starting with the second pasuk. The second pasuk says, "Lo tizav nachla mateh acher b'sibat abal." That's why I'm definitely talking about a husband. Atamar b'sibat abal, when I'll b'sibat aben. It's talking about a husband or a child. Shumer lo tizav nachla libnei yisrael mimateh mateh. We already have a pasuk before that says mimateh mateh b'sibat aben. We already know about the son already. Say amur, it's already said. Hamanim ekeim lo tizav nachla mateh mateh acher. How do I explain the second pasuk? It must be talking about sibat abal katuv medaber. Right, so according to this, the Rashbam says, why do we have two brightot? One's called sibat abal, one's called sibat aben. Is exactly what you're suggesting, David, that one of the brachos, it's obvious to them that the second pasuk is talking about the Baal, and one of the brachos is obvious to them the first pasuk is talking about the Ben. But in the end, they come to the same conclusion, which is that the first pasuk is talking about Ben, and the second one is talking about Baal. You're right. That's the Rishbam's explanation why the Gemara called them different brachos, because their premise starts from a different hanacha. The underlying assumption, whether what is obvious and what's not obvious, that's the difference between them, but in the end, they come to the same conclusion. The Rabbeinu Tam rejects this and says no. Then why, first of all, why would you call it two different brachot? In the end, they're the same brachot, so they come to the same glue. Fine, they go about it a different way. You don't call a brachot Sibat Abal and Sibat Aben just because they, where they start from. Since that doesn't make sense. Number two is, the Gemara is about to make a statement, and we won't do it now, but I'll just tell you, the Gemara is saying, Kuli Amam Yadmi Mateh L'Mateh Acher B'Sibat Abal HaKatuv Mitaber. Everybody agrees that the Pasuk of Mateh L'Mateh Acher is talking about the Baal. That's the Gemara's next statement. Everybody agrees to that. According to the Rashbam, they not only agree to that, they also agree that the first pasuk is talking about the Ben. So why doesn't the Gemara say, oh, everybody agrees to everything? That's not what it says. It says that only the second pasuk they agree about. So because of that, he has a different girsa. Well, the Rashbam, it's clear the Rashbam changed the girsa and the Gemara. The Gemara's girsa follows the Rashbam like it does in other places where it follows Rashi. When Rashi says, Achi Gersinan, that's what the text follows that girsa. So when you find what Tosu says, it's not necessarily that he's changing the girsa. It might have been that was the original girsa, and Rashi or the Rashbam changed the girsa. The Rabbeinu Tam is a girsa, and his girsa is like this. He says, Achi Gersinan Rabbeinu Tam, Tani b'sibit habal lo tisov nachalal b'nei somi mateh l'mateh. Hareis b'sibat habal haktuv medaber. So that is talking about sibat habal. Kshomer lo tisov nachalal b'mateh acher, harei b'sibat habal haktuv medaber. Kmo sheze b'sibit habal, gam ze b'sibit habal. That first braisa, according to him, why does it say Tanya Sibat Abal? He thinks both psukim are talking about Sibat Abal. The next Tana says no. One pasuk is Sibat Abal, one is Sibat Aben.
Why didn't he say the same?
Because that's in the Gemara's next line. Kuleyama agreed that by Acher, it's talking about Sibat Abal. That's the only thing they agree about. They agree about that pasuk, the second pasuk is talking about Abal. Both braitot agree about that. The first pasuk, they disagree. One says it's talking about a Baal, one says it's talking about Ben. So that's why the Rabbeinu Tam reads the Gemara. Again, it's why you call the two Breita, or Sibet the Baal, Sibet the Ben. The Rashi simply says because of the underlying, what David pointed out, it's just the underlying, what the underlying assumption of what they believe to be easy, and then what they need to learn out. The Rabbeinu Tam says that's not a way to call Pesukim, not a way to call the Breitot, but rather the reason they call the Breitot this is because they really have two different opinions. One Breitot believes everything's talking about Sibat HaBaal, right? Like the, and therefore, right, later on when the Gemara says Kuli Alma, that everybody agrees about the Pasuk of Acher, it's about the Baal, that's because the only thing they agree about. The second Breitot talks about the first Pasuk is Ben, second Pasuk is Baal, and so that's where they agree on the Mateh Mateh Acher is Baal. But the first Pasuk of Mateh La Mateh, they don't agree. One says, the first Breitot says Baal, and the second Breitot says Ben. Okay, we'll stop over here.
Oh, yeah.